we need to really encourage that innovation and that entrepreneurial spirit a lot younger and actually encourage that, you know, from our universities and to try and engender that and actually get that bedrock of people actually really excited to get into that and see that as a career, and not just cybersecurity, but innovation and being an entrepreneur.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Jason Morell, Group Executive from OzCyber, and today we're discussing the roadmap for cybersecurity startups here in Australia. So Jason, I feel so rude that I have never asked you on the podcast, and it's only taken me nearly 200 episodes. But, you know, I've known you for a couple of years now. You've got a great background, got a strong business acumen, which I'm really appreciative for, and I'm really excited that you're now getting involved with OzCyber. Now, I want to start the podcast super basic, and I want to get it from you directly, is what is it that OzCyber do? It seems really general sort of question, but there is definitely still some confusion in the market, and I wanted to sort of just clear that up for people from the get-go.
Yeah, OzCyber itself was actually founded in 2017, so it's been around for a while now, and the main objective when it was first set up was as an industry growth center. So OzCyber had been funded or has been funded by federal government grants, and basically it was sort of aligning with two national programs at the time. So there was the Australian Cyber Strategy, you know, which is sort of kicking off. So we're going back to sort of Malcolm Turnbull days back then, and the Industry Growth Centres initiatives. There was one of six centres, I believe, that were set up in the sector to help with, you know, as a strategic priority to boost innovation and science in Australia. So that was something I think Malcolm Turnbull at the time had flagged. He wanted us to become a smarter nation. And OzCyber sort of fell within that realm there. Sort of fast forward, you know, a few years. And I think COVID had a bit of an impact, as we all know, across a lot of parts of Australia. And one of them was, you know, in the cyber sector and what OzCyber was doing. And what happened at that point was about 2 years ago, or tick over 2 years ago, Stone and Chalk Group, which is the largest innovation community in Australia, and OzCyber actually merged together. So the whole point of that is, you know, that Stone and Chalk obviously with that innovation part. One of the things that OzCyber had been entrusted with is, you know, the growth aspect. So growing a strong cyber ecosystem here, you know, with startups and the like and scale ups. The other part of that equation was to export. So to help with promote and export our cybersecurity businesses to the world. And then obviously helping Australia become basically a leading center for cybersecurity education. So they were the main points that we needed to get right as OzCyber. So it's to grow and connect Australia's cyber system here, promote and export, and then obviously help the education piece here. So it's a few years down the track now. So I'm guessing we'll talk about the sort of go forward position, but that's sort of the history. So there's been a lot of good building blocks put in by the people that preceded me. And so we're just looking to sort of build upon the next iteration, you know, with the new government now, with Minister Claire O'Neill in place now, looking to put a cyber strategy in place, the 2030 strategy, which we'll, I'm sure, touch on here and what that look forward position looks like from the foundation we've built and where we're going to sort of take it next.
Okay, so there are three pillars that you touched on. So growth, export, and then leading center for education to the world. And you said we've got to focus on getting it right. Would you say you've got it right?
Anywhere I look in the world, what we're sort of looking to do, KB, is get those sorts of things right or get them better placed. I think we've learned a lot of lessons. If I think back to the first time I traveled over to RSA, like the RSA conference in San Francisco in 2018, as sort of a fledgling startup ourselves, like Jonathan and I had only just sort of started Cyber Aware back at that time, and going there and having a look at how green we were as an industry landing in America at that stage. And then fast forward to going to RSA in April this year and the advancement in everything that's happened. That's off the back of all the other work that, you know, OzCyber done previously, working with Austrade and other bodies. I think we've got our stuff together a lot better now. So when people are landing there, they're a lot better prepared. They know what to ask for. They know what to do with regard to connection to VCs, how to set up over there, where to look for a beachhead in the market and all those sorts of things. So I think we've got the good foundations there, but yeah, we can take it a lot further. I think there's a lot more we can do on a lot of fronts. Australia is still sitting well behind a lot of parts of the world, but we're looking to leads in other parts. And when we touch on the education piece, yeah, I can go in more depth there. But one of those things is that the UK government are probably 2 years ahead of us there, but we're learning from their mistakes. So sort of saying to them, what did you do that didn't work? So we can avoid that and sort of piggybacking on the good work they've done to help build our education system or our accreditation piece here in Australia.
So when I focus now on the growth side of it, now, when you say growth, what do you mean specifically when you say that? So growing our talent, our cybersecurity companies here in Australia. Now, I've been running my own company close to 6 years. I've been in the space 10 years. I've seen a lot of startups come and go. Now, there are a myriad of reasons as to why they didn't succeed. I think a lot of it is then probably comes down to as well as having that support, having the right people around them to get that growth. So you've obviously come from quite a strong commercial background. You got strong commercial acumen. So when you say growth, what does that look like in your eyes?
The way I see it is that, again, this is something you learn, I think. I've been doing startups myself. Personally, I mean, the first business I started in 2003, I didn't list on the ASX until 2011. You know, the whiskey business, Starved Whiskey, was started, that I co-founded with others, was 2007, you know, got bought out by Diageo 2015. So if you look at those sort of timelines just there, it's a long timeline between startup and when you actually sort of reach any sort of exit point. You know, I think a lot of people you hear these days talk about, oh, we'll just exit in 24 months. You know, we'll be out in 2 years and all that sort of stuff. In my experience, startups take a lot longer than that. I think we started at Cyberware late 2017. You're talking about, say, 6 years in the industry. Both those examples before I gave you have taken more than that time. So I don't think we've had a fair run-up of time to actually judge something upon. You look at Cyrise, you know, Cyrise, I think their seventh cohort was going through and they're no longer running. You know, they finished up on May 19. Look, we need more Cyrise type businesses or more startup environments like Stone and Chalk / OzCyber and Cyrise and all those sorts of things. We need those things in play to help with that. And you need to have more patience and more time because startups take a lot of time. You make a lot of mistakes. You have to pivot a lot. You have to do a lot of different things, especially in a fast paced area like cybersecurity. You have to have some patience. You have to be ready to be bounced around a bit, but you also have to have a bit longer runway. And I just don't think we've given our businesses, especially in the cyberspace, enough time to actually get to where they need to get to. Yes, we have success stories and you can look at Casada and, you know, Bugcrowd and some of the others there, but you know, there's a lot of them that are just starting to hit their straps now. And we just need to give more time and more support. And that's something we haven't done. But you know, from your point of view and my point of view, we understand what it's like to be in that position. So I think having that understanding can help a lot to these businesses to make sure they can get to where they need to be. And it is patience and time.
Yeah, I love that because I do know what you're saying and that, you know, I've been doing this for, you know, like I said, almost 6 years and it is patience, it is time. And that's why when I always say to people, you're just going to have to earn your stripes. It's going to take time. And I think there's these glorified stories of, you know, someone woke up one day, had an idea, 5 minutes later, they got a $1 billion client and then they exited, you know, 6 days later. And that's not a reality. And that may happen, but that's probably the 1% of people.
That is an extreme version. But the fact that I find, you know, quite amazing too, is that most of the people have tried and failed other businesses before they got there. So I could tell you about the successes I've had. And we've spoken about this before, you know, we've had sort of private conversations, but I've stuffed up more than I've succeeded. But it's the lessons and the things you get out of that. You learn far more from your failure than you do from success because you really navel gaze and sort of think about what went wrong or how you could do things differently. Sometimes you can hit a purple patch or go through a run of, you know, just blessed movements where you seem to be able to make no mistakes and do no wrong. Most times I've found that it is the mistakes where you learn from. And a lot of the people who have made successful businesses quite often have failed at other businesses before they get there. Very rare to come, you know, sort of swinging out of the gates and knock one out of the park, you know, on your first attempt. It does happen, but it is rare. But it really does depend on the skill set. And I think one of the things we'll talk about today is how we can help raise that skill set, how we can help partner with people, how we can help match people up to make sure their businesses are set up better for success. And you know, we're well involved in this new cyber strategy, which is coming out with the federal government. We sit down with the team from Home Affairs, you know, on the 19th of this month for what will look like probably the final draft or the draft sort of what this new strategy is going to look like. They had over 300 submissions. I think it was 309 submissions, which the team will pretty much have gone through at Home Affairs now. When we sat down with them last month, they were about just tick over 200 with those. But a lot of the stuff we're talking about here and the things you're touching on are things we're making as priorities going forward in this new strategy. So, you know, and it is, as a nation, we've learned a lot from the mistakes we've made. And it's not just from the bigger corporate sort of ones that we've heard in the news recently. It's a lot broader ranging than that. When you see a lot of the attacks that happen to small and medium-sized businesses and just our average citizens, not just from the washover from these larger attacks, but just from them getting personally phished, maybe at home or in their small businesses, these are areas where we've learned a lot, and I think we can and be better at, you know, sort of going forward with this new strategy.
This is really important to me because obviously I work with a number of cybersecurity startups here in Australia. You know, I would technically still call myself a startup. So I care a lot about it. And I know that you do as well because you've got that pedigree historically. Now I want to sort of focus on cybersecurity startups here in Australia. And you mentioned at an event recently that I was at that it's hard for Australian startups to get ahead here in Australia as the support just isn't there. Now, I've heard this across multiple different industries. So I'm curious to know, like, how will Oz Cyber be supporting our cybersecurity startup community here in Australia? Because I want to ask this because, again, I'm a rubber to the road person, and I know that you are as well. So when someone comes out here and they say, oh, I'm going to do the thing, I'm going to expect that Oz Cyber keeps showing up, not just say, oh, we're going to do a thing, and then they don't actually do a thing, because it actually doesn't help the rest of the community. And, you know, now that, you know, you're on board and you're driving this forward, I want to get results for people out there that have come to me privately and said, hey, like, I need some help. I'm struggling. I need some support. What do I do? And I want to be able to get that assurance from yourself and the team at Oz Cyber to be able to support our community here in Australia.
That's something I put a lot of thought into. So when I did come into the chair as a group executive here, one of the first things that I felt is that we need to work collaboratively across the board. There were so many different industries. And I think even if you just look at, you know, one of our initiatives, and this is probably really a great example of how I see us all working together in the go forward position, is we have the Australian Cybersecurity Professionalisation Program. So that is something that we've been tasked with to put together a clear pathway for how you become a cyber professional. Yeah, you know, there is so many different options out there of where you can go, what you can do, and it can be quite confusing. So on a few fronts. But what we've done is we've put a team together which, you know, covers multiple key groups in the area. So, you know, you're looking at ACER and ACS, AIIA, Tech Council. You're also looking, you know, the universities, the TAFE sector, ISC Squared, ISACA, you know, so we're bringing in as many bodies as we can to sit around the table and nut out how this is going to look. So there is some disagreement, obviously, with what people have different opinions, but we're starting to get to the shape now. We're about to move into phase two, where we're sort of starting to get ready to go into test pilot mode and market to with this sort of program. But what's going to be better here, KB, is that when you have more people sitting around the table putting in their opinion and you get it signed off by multiple parties, when you go forward, you're not going to have as many people pot-shotting that from the side. If you've got most of the major universities, the TAFEs, the industry bodies, et cetera, around the table, putting some framework together, it's going to make things, you know, by design a lot better. Yeah, we're going to be able to test, optimize, redesign and test again, because it's going to be an ongoing moving feast. But we'll have everyone sitting at the table. So once that gets into market, it's going to be having support. So the government are looking for it at the moment and in go forward position. They want industry led, but government backed. So they want as many people in industry and the cyber industry moving forward together and collectively to pull something off. So with the startup scene, I'm looking to do the same thing. Again, very segmented. People can sort of feel that they're alone, especially, you know, again, we go back and we sort of harped on COVID a little bit, but it did disrupt a lot of people who were probably trying to do startups. And often, and you and I've done it, you get out there, you network, you meet people and do those sorts of things. That was a challenge for some businesses. Some it worked for, that they could sort of sell easily online, whether they had a SaaS-based product or whatever, but some actually needed more, get in market, get to talk to people and be in places to actually do what they need to do. There was some knock-on effect there. So if all parties, again, universities, education sectors, we look at, you know, the startup scene, all these sorts of people work together collectively to put their collective nous into how we can help support that ecosystem and that network, it's going to be a lot easier for people in startup scene to then say, I can go down this pathway and I've sort of got a clearly defined roadmap. Although it's not as clear as some, we just want to make it so that they know where they need to be. And when they go and export somewhere like America, they know they can go to America and you need to set up a bank account. Here's the best way to do it. To get legal advice, you go do this. So your sales process should look like this. You need to be spending this much time. Your beachhead or your ideal location, for just say as an example, you're doing something with government, you're probably better based on the East Coast of the US. So then, you know, base yourself in Maryland where they're doing some stuff, or Washington, New York, whatever the case may be. There's some great programs happening in Texas at the moment, over in Miami, you know, so you can sort of start to paint a picture and give people a clearer pathway on what they need to do. learn the lessons from the mentors that have gone before and make that process a lot easier. So I think, you know, by, again, we're only 26 million people. We need to work more collectively together and not be so disjointed. And that also, again, talks to this federal strategy where federal government, the UK strategy when that came out, that was the UK strategy, right? In Australia, we tend to have this thing where the state governments tend to do things separately from federal and from each other, which again can make it quite confusing. So if I'm a startup in Victoria or New South Wales, do I go to my New South Wales government? Do I go to Austrade? Do I go to AusCyber? Where do I go? Who's the best place to go? We want to try and clean that model up and work collectively with all parties to make sure there is a cleaner pathway for all startups.
Oh, that's excellent, because I've had the same questions. People ask me questions. You know, people have said, yeah, who do I go to? Austrade, AusCyber? Like, where am I going? People just want to be able to navigate that. And people ask me, and I don't know. I don't have all the answers. And sometimes even trying to find someone is not even the easiest. And then it just falls on deaf ears and you never know. And then what happens when that happens? People lose momentum. When you lose momentum, your business starts failing then, perhaps, if you're running a startup, for example. So I want to be able to now, with this initiative and all the things that you're putting in place, to really spur this along so it doesn't sort of become disjointed and it doesn't, you know, what's that saying? Lose its wheels or?
Yeah, well, you can lose momentum, but you're right. I remember when doing the startups that, you know, I've been involved in here in Australia, which was Cyberware. I'm talking more cyber specific here. Six Clicks, you know, the GRC AI machine learning platform, and then into CyberHive. All of them, you know, you're looking for funding or you're looking for growth. Where can I get funding from? Where can I get support from? It's really hard to, even from a human point, if you want to get your business here in Australia, to try and find if there is government money's available for you, or there's project that you could go for, or there's something in the market. It's just really hard to find. So we need to clean that up as well, you know, so people have a piece of work that's coming from government that people can apply for, that's easy to find. If there's money available for certain projects, again, that's easy to find and apply for and make that sort of process easier. Yeah. And the thing, and just going back to your original question, I just want to sort of tag back to that, because I probably do give long-winded answers, but I just want to make sure we cover as much stuff, because like you, it's important to me that, you know, if we're going to do this sort of thing, we get the right information out there. Is that often I think why we need to go overseas is because a few things. We're a very small market in the total market for cybersecurity to try and sell in our own country. We make up less than 2% of the total market for cybersecurity. So, you know, trying to sell here, although we know culturally how to do it, it actually can be quite challenging. And that's why markets like the US are so enticing, because, you know, you're sort of 12 times the amount of people. You can go to one city or one state and actually have the same amount of people in one location that you do get in the whole of Australia. You just spread around, you know, obviously this wide brown land of ours. So you can see why it's enticing to go there, but there's a lot of differences when you go there that you need to know, one. But also what we often find is when our startups go offshore, sell well in America, you end up tending to base yourself there. It's easy to come back and sell then. Once you've earned your stripes offshore, people then go, oh, well, I trust you now because, you know, you've gone and sold to big companies in the US. So, you know, we'll buy from you now. And we need to sort of change that around and make it so the procurement process here and businesses will give it a go. And that's something a big piece of work I'm working on at the moment to make that. I just did a post I actually linked in about that whole matching. Yeah. So getting people ready to solve the problems of businesses here, not just here in Australia, but you need to know your customer. And yeah, I'm not giving away any state secrets here, but whenever we've been successful, and this is for startups, I think more generally you need to find your market fit. I think with our startups here, especially in cyber, we tend to look at problems that are now problems or in the past. But, you know, you've seen how quickly generative AI have changed the equation for a lot of people. That was obviously the talk of the town in RSA this year in San Francisco. But, you know, you've got quantum on the doorstep and all these different things that are coming down the track. So we've got to look a bit further ahead. And what we're going to be doing is solving problems and make sure the solution we're building is going to solve that problem. So I think we need our businesses here to be more open about what they're looking for. And we need our startups to actually go and build for those problems, you know, so find a big problem, build a solution that sort of fixes it, and then we can sort of match it up from there. Yeah, on that talk that I was in with the Israeli Chamber of Commerce the other week, it was, you know, talking about, I mean, Israel is a bit of a poster child in some ways. As I mentioned today, they receive 300 times more funding there than what our Australian startups do. And likewise in Canada, you know, Canada, as I said on the night, a very similar size population to us, a Commonwealth country. Yes, they are on the doorstep to the US, but take that away, everything else is similar in play. Again, they receive 300 times more funding. You would have found that in our sector competitiveness plan last year. So there's those pieces of play. And then we go back and look at Israel, and they also make up 30% of the, you know, billion dollar or unicorn companies in cybersecurity. There's other reasons for that. You know, there is the compulsory service element, and they do have sort of 5.5 years of service. And when we're talking people working red team in Israel, you're working real time on the job sort of stuff. So they are battle ready when they get out, and they tend to match these people up from those teams to form startups. And then they have a really good ecosystem there. So, you know, their equivalent of Telstra, their equivalent of, you know, one of the big four banks then has a sandbox environment where they can bring these people in, test their products, get some backing, and off they go. And that's sort of, you know, something we need to look at across the board and say, what elements of what's happening in other countries can we take, like we've done with this accreditation program we're doing, to look at where are leaders or where are people that are further advanced than us, take the cheat notes and see if we can sort of fast track ourselves to get where they are.
Okay, I love all that. Now, there's something that I want to revisit that you mentioned. Just if I go back a step, you said we're very disjointed for a country of 26 million people. I agree. Why are we so all over the shop?
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, if you look at it, obviously coming from Startup Land too, I sort of observe a few things. Trade do a great job, and they sort of partnered with us and look into a lot more stuff with them. When we went to the US, we're doing some tours to Israel. There will be some tours to the UK. So, you know, Austrade are a great resource, you know, to sort of go to. And sort of interestingly, the New South Wales government, Victorian government individually have as many or more offices than we do as a sort of federal body overseas. So the markets are like the Victorian government, the New South Wales government, I wouldn't say they're going head to head, but they're sort of going into the same markets. And this is when we went to RSA, one of the things I sort of said to everyone, and to the credit, everyone sort of jumped on board. You know, Investment New South Wales, Global Vic were both sponsors of the event going over there. And along with Austrade, we really did a Team Australia approach. I think that's, as I said earlier in this talk, is where we need to be sort of looking at. I think what we just need to do is get everyone on the same page. I think, you know, to answer it, I think best is that this new national strategy, when we did have the last meeting with the team from Home Affairs, one of the things we did ask was, okay, you're going to have this national strategy. How is that going to filter down to the state governments? And they said, well, we can't really tell the state governments what to do. They sort of have to do their own sort of thing. And we're sort of, hang on, let's just stop there for a sec. We've pretty much got a full deck of Labor state governments at the moment, but Tasmania, which is, I think, due to that stadium, you know, sort of hanging in the balance there. So we also set up, remember, KB, a national cabinet, you know, during mm-hmm. COVID, so that we could sort of sit around the table and get on the same page there. I think with the major attacks we've had, the new cyber strategy and everything else, I couldn't see a better time that we could get everyone on the same page. So that's how I envisage, or how I'd like to see that with this new strategy being embedded, that everyone is on the same page. You know, if we follow a GDPR model or similar, that's all enacted by the same states. If we follow the same sort of metrics, you know, you won't have some states doing the NIST framework and some doing ISO 27001, et cetera. So we make a good enough strategy that everyone sort of is enacted and follows. I think that's going to fix that problem a bit. And then all the governments working together then, obviously for export purposes and to help startups as well as a part of that whole play.
So I noticed recently, I think it was like a week or so ago, you announced the Oz Cyber Innovation Network, a groundbreaking initiative that is set to revolutionize Australia's cybersecurity landscape. So maybe for people who missed the update or unfamiliar, would you be able to explain a little bit more about what it is and what you're going to be doing with this new initiative?
Yeah, absolutely. So again, the framework was built previously, which was called a national node network. Now, in real quick terms, what that tended to be is AusCyber would co-invest with a state government. And so it become very localized. So whether that be the West Australian government, South Australian government, Tasmanian government, et cetera, what would happen is it tended to be a match funding sort of initiative. Yeah, as an example, put 50K in from cyber, 50K in from the state government. What tended to happen though is the programs did some fantastic work, but they tended to be very localized. So the national node network tended to be more localized into those states and activities happening mainly in the capital cities. The want that we're looking to do with the innovation network is to spread that a bit more broadly. So we've set up a co-design committee, which is a similar process we did with the AS program, with the accreditation program. So we've got people representing different aspects of the cyber community across the different states and territories as well. So you'll have, just as an example, you know, Adam Bennett from Red Piranha in WA, and Matt Wilcox, you know, from Fifth Domain in the ACT. But we'll also have the likes of, you know, Ben Doyle from Talus as a CISO, and Tony Visser, you know, who's a partner at Quartermentor as well. So we're looking to get a bit of a blend, you know, through there. We'll work closely with the likes of AWSN, you know, to look at setting up underneath this program, ambassador program as well. So it's looking to get a bit broader into the market. So looking to spread into, you know, far flung communities and people that might living outside the major, you know, capital cities. Because when we were in the Northern Territory last night and talking to the government over there, they were saying that, you know, the Indigenous community has a high uptake of, you know, the prepaid phones and all that sort of thing, but they're not actually getting any training on cybersecurity or, you know, how to avoid phishing emails or anything like that. So we'd like to take it a bit broader and into communities. Obviously working with the likes of AWSN who have done power of work in this area, we'll learn a lot. Again, it's learning a lot from programs they've sort of run out there. But like the other programs, it's going to get as many people from as many different backgrounds and areas as we can and different levels of skill sets in cybersecurity to actually help do this. And what will come from that, KB, is that we'll do a pilot. Just as an example, we're doing the accreditation program, doing a pilot down in Tasmania. When that works, we sort of copy and paste that and then share it with the rest of the network and send it around the rest of Australia. So it'll be a sort of two-way feeder. We'll have ideas that we feed down into the network to give a run, but we'll also be doing piloted programs around. We've got some coming up in the Sunshine Coast, et cetera. In schooling systems, you know, primary schools, it'll be working with local councils. Yeah, something might go well in Geelong in Victoria or in Newcastle, you know, or down in Mandarin, WA or somewhere. And as soon as that program works, we'll share those learnings back up through the network and spread it across there. So it's really a way that we can hopefully fast track and get more inclusive with areas that, as I say, sit outside the capital cities and get ambassadors and people that want to participate. So hopefully it'll be a way of getting people fast tracked with their cyber knowledge as well, you know, using the older mentors and bringing newer people into the system and help that learning process as well. So yeah, helping at the top level, but also bringing in younger people and sharing the learnings from our accreditation program, all the other work we're doing, plus work that's been done by other bodies that are around us as well.
That's excellent. I really love that. And I think that you have thought outside the box. It's not just about the big capital cities like Sydney, Melbourne, for example. It is in other regional areas in Australia. So in terms of accountability, this is something that I'm really big on. And I know that you are as well. So just say in a couple of months, I bring you back on the show and say, okay, hey, Jason, where are things at since we last spoke? Is there ways that people like, it's not about holding you accountable. It's just more so I want to see the needle move. Is there ways that we can disseminate some of that information out to people so they know that, like, again, you as an organization are doing as you say you're going to do? Because it's very easy for people to sit back and say, oh yeah, we're going to do all these things, and then they never do. Now, I'm not insinuating that's what is going to happen. It's just more so that now you've got a great opportunity to make the headway, and I'd love to see that headway, you know, continue to evolve as we sort of, as the year unfolds, but then also into 2024.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, a lot of these projects will go well beyond that sort of time frame. So the second part of the whole AusCyber Stone and Chalk story is that there is no more government funding. So we have to become a sustainable model as well. So, you know, the government funding was due to finish. Well, it is finished. It was June 30 this year. So at the end of this month was the original time frame for the money to be utilized or used for all the projects. DISA, the government body, extended that out until June 30 next year. So we have an extension of time, but we don't really have an extension of money. But part of that last sort of funding that came through was to turn it into a sustainable model. So as I said, we're the last of those industry growth centers that are remaining, and, you know, working in conjunction with Stone and Chalk, it is to turn that into a sustainable model. So we're going to really rely, I think, going forward as a complete industry. Yeah, I still believe, you know, if you look at the last budget, there's going to be funding there for cybersecurity initiatives. Don't get me wrong, but I don't want us to be that reliant that that's your only way of funding. So we need to look at partnering up and sort of, you know, cross-pollinating our sort of pot to make sure that we sort of all work together. I think you look at normal businesses at the moment across the board, people are really tightening up. You know, you look at a lot of the large tech companies, even in the US, now going back a couple of months ago, they started cutting staff. They could sort of see the writing on the wall. This is obviously going to affect startups. And no matter that, you know, how much cybersecurity is needed, that you're going to feel the pinch in that area as well. So I think the way we sort of go forward is partnering, you know, pooling money together, pooling resources and pooling our knowledge together to actually get us to where we need to get to. So the work that we will do, especially we have our first co-design meeting on the new initiative with this innovation network in the middle of June. And so off that, we'll have a plan that'll start to be sort of that mud map of where that's going to look to go. So it's going to be pretty big chunks of work, you know, and this is I'm sort of thinking 25, 26 for a lot of completion, even with the accreditation program we spoke about. By the time we get phase two underway, to get it into market, you're probably looking 25, 26, you know, to get that in play as well. So they're not in significant pieces of work, but you will see progress that happens down the track. You know me, I'm always pushing for faster, quicker. I don't like to wait. So if someone says, let's do something in this time, I want to try and halve it as best we can. But you got to be realistic at the same time. You know, these, as I say, aren't insignificant pieces of work. And I think in some ways we, even though we're working with this new strategy, until that new strategy comes out in October and there's probably more sort of budget around what's going to be important and we know what's important to the government, that's going to determine where we put more focus. So I think I want to paint the picture of all the bits of work that I think are important and feel that we need to get there. And also it's going to be sort of having to go hand in glove with where this strategy is and what money is available in the market and what people think we need to focus on, I think. So it's going to be a two-way thing. But no, I'm committed no matter what it takes to actually get all this work delivered. I'm not going anywhere. I'll stay involved in cybersecurity as long as I can. I'd love it not to have to be a job, that cybersecurity is not a big deal anymore and we don't need us in the industry. But I can't see that happening in the foreseeable future. So whatever I need to do or however I need to be involved to get us there collectively, that's what I'm doing. I'm not doing this work for us, for me, as in to push myself forward. It's actually to bring us up as a whole cyber community. See our cyber being more that role of, you know, the conductor of the orchestra, looking at who's in the orchestra pit and trying to get us all playing tune and match people up as required to get things done, whether that's from startup, from the university or the schooling or education sector. Anywhere where I need to sort of say, hey, you should talk to that person or bring people together to actually get the outcome we need. That's what I'm looking for, is more of the outcome to get the desired result to make us, as Clara Neils boldly, the minister said, you know, the most secure nation by 2030. I'd love to be driving and getting as close to that as possible, hitting that mark and be a large part of that and working with people like yourself and our cyber community to get there as best we can. That's the ultimate goal. So yeah, I'll always be clear on what I want to do and where we want to go. And I'd rather die trying, but have a good crack and get us third in the world or fifth in the world, to say, than that aim at nothing and hit that with tremendous accuracy, which a lot of people tend to do.
Yeah, I love that. And I love that saying, die trying. I definitely believe we're on the same wavelength on that front. So just maybe going back for a moment, Jason, around now, I know that you're putting in all these initiatives and frameworks and bringing people together. I love all of that. But just say this wasn't happening, would you be afraid that the lack of support and maybe the encouragement in Australia would mean the lack of innovation from a cyber perspective in Australia? So all this stuff wasn't happening. Would you then, because I mean, even we spoke like a week ago, like I said, there's been a few failed startups in cybersecurity, which is really sad. If there wasn't any of the support that AusCyber and yourself are putting in place, would you then foresee more failures and lack of support? And then even more, just not even creating innovation because there is no support potentially for people.
It's sort of like you've been in my head because this is stuff I think about all the time. Things like this tall poppy syndrome, we can't escape from that, unfortunately, where if you look on the other side of the world and we look at America, very gung-ho, they're not worried about failure. They actually wear bankruptcy almost like a badge of honor, whereas here you're almost, you know, sort of socially removed from the scene if you've actually had a failure. In America, it's encouraged, you know, go for it, go for your dreams, go for it, you know, and they encourage innovation. They put the arms around people who are actually looking to do that. And it's looked upon as, you know, something to aspire to be an entrepreneur, to be an innovator and actually do that. I think culturally, we need to change that. Generally, it is starting. People will be more likely to have a crack. And the younger you are, the less, you know, worried you are about failure. But a lot of the cyber startups that we tend to produce in this country tend to be oftentimes older people who probably can't take the risk as much as you can when you're young, you know. So I think we need to really encourage that innovation and that entrepreneurial spirit a lot younger and actually encourage that, you know, from our universities and the like, to try and engender that and actually get that bedrock of people actually really excited to get into that and see that as a career, and not just cybersecurity, but innovation and being an entrepreneur. So we need to change the mindset back there. We then, if you talk about the people who are policymakers and lawmakers and all that sort of stuff, with the tax advantage and the way we can sort of fund, you know, VC-wise, we're not really that flush here with VC money, whereas especially for cybersecurity, when you look at other countries which have specific funds for VCs for cyber, and obviously America again is another country we'll look at there, but they will make an office in obviously somewhere like Israel, which has a population of 10 million people, because they know their strike rate's going to be a lot higher there. whereas they don't tend to come here in Australia to do the same thing because we don't have that culture. So again, as part of this 2030 strategy, if we're going to hit that KB, we really need to be producing a lot of homegrown and homemade talent that has come up with a lot of innovation, not just in the space of cybersecurity, but across the board. We really need to engender that and actually make that a pathway, support that financially, and actually support it with people who can mentor people that have really got the runs on the board and have the stripes, not people that have just read a book and then just trying to regurgitate that and mislead people. So we just need genuine talent in the country to come back, because a lot of them are overseas, to come and help sort of lift up the people who need it in the market.
You mentioned before earlier in the interview that, and I do know it, all the things you're saying, my head's nodding, you can't see me, but yes, I agree. Oftentimes, organizations, now whether they are in cyber or not, they go to America. The sad thing is Australia loses that talent. Maybe they don't even have a business that operates in Australia because they're like, well, I've got no support. And maybe they do come back, like you said, to be like, oh, well, you made it in America. You can help us now. I've seen that even with actresses here in Australia. Don't you think that's a bit worrying then? Because we might be losing our top people to overseas because we can't bother supporting them.
Yeah. No, the brain drain is a true thing. And I think if you look back to when Malcolm Turnbull was first putting these bits in place, was exactly that, you know, to become a smarter country, to stop the brain drain, create a space where we keep people here as well, so they didn't feel they had to go offshore. And you do lose that. I mean, and from a government point of view, they obviously see it as you're losing a tax base. You know, rather than someone setting up a business here and the state governments we sort of touched on before, they're then losing, you know, the business. Instead of setting up here, they go set up in the US or somewhere else. They employ people over there. They pay their taxes there. So we don't see any of that. So we could have been this growth for someone to then go offshore and, you know, we'd spend all the taxes, just like tax dollars, bringing them up, so to speak. And then they go and spread their wings offshore and that's where the money stays and taxes go, I sort of think. So I think a selfish point of view as a government, they can kind of look at it from that way. But I think we need to look at it more at the human element, because I think Australia's a great place to live and you'd want to stay here if you could. And although the world has become interconnected, we're still a long way away. You know, we're a 14, 15 hour flight from the west coast of the US. So it's not an insignificant time to get on a plane to get there. You don't just fly there for the weekend or anything like that. When you set up there, you need to set up there properly and you have to be in a market. So, you know, there's all these things we need to take into account. I think also we don't look probably in our own region, you know, this sort of APAC region or Oceania region enough that there's opportunities for us on our own doorsteps as well. We tend to look at places like the US and RSA and others. I've been talking a lot with Juliet Wilcox, who's the, you know, cyber ambassador from the UK, about this whole AUKUS thing, or how do we do more things in conjunction with the UK to sort of help Australian businesses get there and vice versa. So I think we need to look at a two-way relationship and not be so selfish, say, oh, we just need to either send our people over there and set up there or, you know, bring people here. We need to make that a sort of an even spread, because I think we can share the resources, the brain power and everything like that between countries, rather than saying that we're just, but I think you're right, Kevin. I think it's been a very much more one-way thing. We're losing a lot more talent than we're actually gaining, bringing back in. And I mean, that sort of touches on even stuff with regard to visas and other things where we could get people from other countries in here. Again, just harping back to our sector competitors plan last year, you know, that we're going to be about 3,000 jobs short. And I think probably more, you know, in cyber professionals. We really need to open up that talent pool to bring more people in until we get our skill base up here. And same with, you know, a lot of the businesses, we're going to have to use overseas products and solutions to fill the gap until we can sort of find our own, you know, sort of similar products here that we can sort of back to fill that up to that 2030 mark. So it's a big question you ask there, because it's very layered and there's so many different sort of moving pieces to it. But yeah, I think intrinsically, if you were a startup here and you had the opportunity to stay here and could build a successful business, global business from here, you would stay here. But the reality is at the moment, more than likely have to go offshore and more particularly to the US to be successful.
So just going back to the government point you raised, which is very valid, hypothetically, people go over there, they can't tax people then. Now, I agree with you, selfishly incentivized by that. So they should be putting a focus on that if they look at it from that perspective. But then equally, I think it's even hard for startups as well. Like in this country, like when you start telling people from overseas how much we get taxed, people are like perplexed. It's not easy then for startups. Like after that, you know, that tax-free threshold, like you're making profit, for example, like you are being taxed, but like in the US, there are certain schemes, and I mean, I'm not an expert on it, maybe you are, there are things under some entrepreneurial thing that you don't get taxed up until you make X amount of dollars. So how are you really incentivizing people to even want to build a startup in this country?
Well, that's funny. I do have a financial background, so I'll have to do the old disclaimer before I say this is not financial advice. But in saying that, going to the US, great example again, there are certain states where you can set up your business and be more tax advantaged because there's a lower tax rate. You can go to places like Singapore as an example too, much lower tax rate. Parts of the Middle East, you know, people often set up in, again, due to those, you know, lower taxes. Also, there's going to Maryland, just as an example, there's some advantage where the local governments there will say, oh, come here and we'll give you X, Y, and Z. There's an incentive to go there. So in an Australian context, we tend to do it when, oh, there's an opportunity for a Hollywood film to come here. Let's pitch, you know, the film studio on the Gold Coast or in Sydney or et cetera, you know what I mean? They'll give incentive to get jobs here, obviously, to bring a film to be made, you know, a Hollywood studio in Australia. They'll incentivize that sort of thing. But we're not tending to do it as much with business. Although just say when Amazon came here and they wanted to build warehouses, the states were pitching, yeah, let's get the Amazon warehouse built here or whatever the case may be. So it does happen, but we don't tend to do it to encourage something as key at the moment, just say as cybersecurity, whereas other countries like the US have different tax environments and they also do give big incentives or strong incentives to have Australian businesses and others from other countries landing over there. We need to make it a little bit more enticing for the same to happen of bringing other companies here, but also how can we offer incentives for our own businesses, whether that be lower tax rates, access to money at cheaper rates, etc., to make sure that they want to stay here and can stay here comfortably and thrive.
So then my last question for you is, where is the front door for OzCyber? How can people, if they're listening to this and they're like, hey, Jason's made excellent points, how can people sort of get in touch? Do they, you know, do they hit up on LinkedIn? Do they call you guys up? Like, how does that look? How do people get engaged with OzCyber?
Yeah, any way you want. So, you know, contact us either through, you know, go to OzCyber.com. Please hit me up on LinkedIn or the OzCyber page through any of our socials. Always happy to help or give advice. Yeah, I'm sure a lot of people could vouch that I'm always here to help where I can. There's a lot of people I've helped, you know, on the quiet and happy to do that, have conversations to assist where we can. Use our services, you know, through OzCyber, get in contact with, you know, your state governments. Happy to introduce contacts there if that's applicable or, you know, Austrade. Keep an eye on our social because there is a lot of stuff happening with what we're doing and the projects we're working on. There will be updates. I try as best I can to put stuff in the market, whether it be from an opinion piece or with the work we're doing. If there's other groups that want to come in and work with us, startups that need assistance, anything that I've mentioned from educational facilities. I mean, we've spoken to most of them, especially with universities and TAFEs and the like, but you know, we're looking to run programs and it's something we're working federally with to get, yeah, my belief's always been to get it rather than trying to unlearn people, bad habits in the workplace, get it started in primary school. Yeah. We always teach our kids, brush your teeth, you know, put a seatbelt on when you get in the vehicle. They do that on autopilot. We need to get, you know, like a slip, slop, slap campaign for cybersecurity, you know, whether it be with, you know, passwords or password manager, you know, multi-factor authentication updates when available, something that just starts to get in the normal vernacular for a child because kids intuitively can pick up something as Steve Jobs made, you know, a nice little iPhone and they can rattle through that and start using that with unfettered access to the internet, et cetera. Yeah, we need to make sure we wouldn't be throwing the keys of the car to our kids without any driving lessons or any education, but from a getting onto the internet sort of sense, there doesn't seem to be those same sort of guardrails in place. So, you know, I want to cover the, you know, cradle to grave that we can with cybersecurity because there's a lot of obviously older folk that have sort of missed that, didn't grow up with tech that need assistance as well. I think there's a lot of things we can put in that are not going to be too costly that could just be the basics and the basis to build our whole cyber strategy off. And so anyone who's involved in any of those areas, I know it's pretty broad ranging, but I'm here to do as much as I can. I'm not expert at everything, but if I can't help, I'll put you in contact with someone who is. And that's the whole point of what we're doing with the Innovation Network is getting people better and smarter than me in the room to try and grow this and throw as many bodies as we can. Always say it's funny when we have probably not funny, but you know, we get a cyber attack here and everyone runs away from the problem. You know, the The reverse is true, though, in true Australian spirit. When there's a bushfire or there's a flood, you know, we have a whole volunteer network that run toward that to help people, and they're lauded for that. I'd love for us as a nation, and with the skilled professionals we have, we run toward a problem and sort of wrap our arms around the business to help it, learn the lessons from that that we can pass on so it doesn't happen to anyone else, you know, rather than this shutting the blinds down, giving false information out there, people not knowing what's going on from a customer point of view or anything else. We really need to open that up because that's the only way we're going to learn. You know, the cyber criminals are very good at sharing information and sharing their skills around and say, this really worked, you should try that. But we're not tending to do that on the good side or the bright side of cybersecurity. So I'd like to see those sort of changes happen. So anyone who's with me on that and wants to reach out and be part of that, the whole thing we want to do with the Innovation Network and with our cybersecurity ambassadors, you know, and bring everyone together. You don't get everyone who loves you, everyone who agrees with you. That's fair enough. That's anything in life. That's just cybersecurity. But for people who want to buy into the mission and actually help us get there, that's what I'm here for. And I'm thankful to you, KB, for all your help along the way and all the conversation we've had, and also for the opportunity, hopefully, to put something out there that resonates with some people that, yeah, we can get more people to fight the good fight and hopefully by 2030, get up on that podium and wrap a gold medal over our necks, ready for the Brisbane Olympics in 2032.
Oh, well, thank you for that, Jason. I really appreciated you taking the time today to answer some of the questions that I know people did want answered, and you've shone a massive light in some of those grey/darker areas. So I really appreciate you being honest and being real about the reality of what's happening and also looking at it from both sides. So I really appreciate the time and thanks for coming on the show today.
Thanks for the questions. And I've said with the strategy, it doesn't mean that it's right, but I think with cybersecurity, we need to hit it with tremendous accuracy. We have to aim at something. Cybersecurity is such a fast moving and fast paced area that we really need to keep making sure that we adjust our strategy accordingly. But you need some pretty big chunks in place to actually follow to actually get there. So I'm looking forward to hopefully this strategy and, you know, getting in place and something that we can all sort of follow and hopefully get somewhere a bit better than where we are today.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MercSec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MercSec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.